The Grizzly Berry Cafe podcast is brought to you by our pals over at Cobra Eye Radar, a sleek and compact detection unit that provides you with state-of-the-art radar and laser detection technology. Find out more at Cobra.com.
The Grizzly Berry Cafe is brought to you this week by The Handy Holder, the most comfortable and secure way to hold and view your iPad or other tablet devices, providing full 360-degree rotation to meet all users' unique viewing needs. Check them out at handyholder.com.
Hey, so this is just what I was looking at just now, by the way.
Yeah.
There's a comic convention in New Jersey. It's in Cherry Hill. I don't know how far that might be from you. October 8 and 9.
Why does everything that you ask me to do need to be near and close to you and not close to me? What's going on?
I can't go to this. I'll be wrestling in North Carolina and Tennessee. But among the guests, what a bizarre collection of people. Davy Jones from the Monkees, Barbara Eden from I Dream of Jeannie, right? She rarely does conventions. The girl from Heroes, Hayden Panettiere, or however you say her name.
Who's she?
The cheerleader from Heroes.
Oh, right. The blonde?
Yeah. Jonathan Frakes. The guy who played Q, who also apparently doesn't do very many convention appearances. Jackson Bostwick, who was Captain Marvel in the 70s. Of all the bizarre, weird people you could get to, they got Larry Storch, the guy who did the Joker's voice on the Scooby-Doo episode where they teamed up with Batman. Like,
really?
How out of work must that guy be? But all these, and a bunch of other weird guests, too. Like, this is the weirdest array of guests ever. That's at Garden State Comic Con, October 8 and 9 in Cherry Hill. So the double, I mean, just Frakes and Q alone, I realize, might lure you out. But what a weird assortment of guests.
No, I only got out of the house for Nichelle Nichols, who played, Uhura in Star
Trek. How many times have you met her?
I think I've met her twice. And then didn't you, no, you got me a signed picture of, who did you get for me one time when I wasn't there?
Oh, yeah.
Marina Sirtis, who played Counselor Troy, right?
Right, I ended up sitting next to her at a convention. This is really strange that you brought this up, because before you and I speak again, we will pass the 10-year anniversary of the release of Headquarters.
Which is your autobiography.
A memoir I did, yeah. Certainly not an all-encompassing one, but
about 20% accurate.
Right, give or take. Maybe closer to 15%. But that came out right after September 11th happened. Which, and, you know, of course,
perfect
like,
timing.
You know, right. Oh, absolutely was. Especially the chapter about, like, how much I'm not a patriot. Like, the timing of that couldn't have been better for sales. but, right, you know, right now there's, like, all that remember 9/11 stuff, right? Because here it is. It's been 10 years. And I even watched a couple programs where they were, like, you know, interviewing, like, survivors or people that did this or that. And I was like, it's been 10 years since Headquarters came out. And it was actually for promotion of Headquarters, I was at a convention, I think in New Jersey, where I ended up, and part of it was like spilled off the convention floor into this other area, which is where I was. And I just happened to be, like, my space was right next to Marina Sirtis, who was Counselor Troy from Star Trek The Next Generation. And she had, as you can imagine, at like a sci-fi Comic Con kind of thing, she had a monstrous line. You know, and I had for the, you know, whatever period of time I had to be there, 4 hours or whatever, I had like no line, you know, because no one really knew who I was. And that hasn't changed a lot.
Well, I think the venue seems a little odd or out of place. That's why I'm surprised that you had like I Dream of Jeannie coming to a comic convention. Really? Like who? I don't really associate that with a comic convention, but I guess is there spillover from the comic genre into Chikara or pro wrestling, would you think?
Well, there's definitely, like, I think Comic Cons to attract a wider audience have expanded, right? And they include sci-fi and fantasy television. They include movie stars. Right? You go to any of these, right? There's guaranteed to be, like, a former Playboy Playmate. I mean, what does that have to do with comic books?
Right.
So they've sort of expanded their scope in that way. And like, the vast majority, whether I'm, you know, going there as a promotional appearance or just going to enjoy myself, there's always a pro wrestler, right? I mean, what does that have to do with comic books? So they've just sort of expanded the scope of what they do. Right, yeah, you kind of think like Barbara Eden. It's just like a TV personality that might get you to say, oh, wow, I might want to go meet her, you know, I guess if you're really into I Dream of Jeannie. I don't know that she was ever, well, she was also on Dallas, wasn't she, Barbara Eden? But
you might be right.
What else did she ever do, you know, other than I Dream of Jeannie? And
I don't know. But I mean, you know, the couple of the Star Trek conventions I went to were, you know, I had a lot of fun. You know, they were a lot of fun. I saw Brent Spiner. I hate to admit that, you know, that I was at one of these things, but mm-hmm. Brent Spiner, of course, who played Data.
Sure, I got to meet him too. He was very nice.
Yeah. William Shatner, you know, he did a whole speech and it was very, very funny. He's very funny on stage. So that was entertaining. You know, of course, that's the big one, right? You get to go see William Shatner, Captain Kirk, when everything else is downhill from there, right?
You're never going to top that.
Yeah, I mean, Jonathan Frakes. I'm sure it's surprising that he, of course, number one, that he's still doing that stuff. I mean, it seems like he's the top of that billing, the one that you just mentioned, right? I mean, who else? I mean, someone above him there? Everyone wants to go
above
see him.
Above Frakes?
Yeah.
Listed above them were Barbara Eden from I Dream of Jeannie, Hayden, I don't know how her last name is pronounced, Panettiere, something like that, and Davy Jones were all listed above Jonathan Frakes.
So why is Davy Jones at a comic convention?
Right, exactly. That's what I mean. Like, they just spill over into other genres because I think they're to the point where they'll just do anything to try and get
And do they need money? Does Davy Jones need money? I mean, aren't the monkeys living off of royalties for the rest of their lives and doing really well?
Well, you know, they just finished that tour. They toured all summer, three of the four of them anyway. Papa Nez didn't go on the road per usual. You would think that they must be doing well, but yet, you know, you don't really know. Like, for example, you know, in the early days when they were really, like, before they took any kind of control over what they did, like, their contracts were kind of dictated to them by Cold Gems and the management at Cold Gems. And for all I know, maybe they don't make royalties off their first couple of albums because they signed into bad contracts. Like, who knows? Maybe they are kind of hurting for money. I would wager to say, if you've read enough interviews with them, especially, you know, Nez doesn't do a lot of interviews, but if you read, like, Mickey, Peter, and Davey's interviews and you kind of read between the lines, you really get the sense that they do not like each other anymore. So why else would they go out on tour? Right?
Right. Like, Other than to make money.
Right. They must need the money. Whether they're going to come out and say that in an interview or not, they must need the money if these guys really don't like each other. And, you know, like, Davy Jones, I'm sure, could be like, singing at Dorney Park or, you know, whatever. I'm sure he could find other ways to make a couple bucks. But, you know, the power is when you can advertise them as a group. But it's weird to me. Yeah, like you said.
It must be weird when you become a novelty, right? When you become a novelty act. You know, we were down at Ocean City, Maryland. Of course, they have this Sun Fest that happens at the end of September. And there's like a, you know, a has-been act that appears there.
And who was this has-been?
Well, I hate to say,
Don McLean.
No, I hate to say this year that this individual is perhaps a has-been, but a number of years ago when I was down there, they had my mom had bought tickets to go see Sha-na-na.
Wow. I used to watch that with my grandparents as a little kid when they had their TV show.
And what's that famous song, The Hand Jive?
I have no idea. I mean, I was really little. I just remembered they sang a lot on the TV show, and I was like, "Whoa, what's this?"
Yeah, I got to look this up. Sha-na-na on their hand.
What a weird group.
I'm pretty sure it was Sha. How do you spell that? Sha-na-na.
It's S-H-A space N-A space N-A.
Yeah. Oh, I can go right to get Sha-na-na tickets on Ticketmaster if you're interested. But my mom had purchased tickets for the official Sha-na-na website. Ooh. Oh, here we go. This is fantastic. The Sha-na-na Rock and Roll Celebration. This is fantastic stuff here. Let me go to some wiki. Let me do some wikiing of this. Get a Job was one of their big songs. Their hit song, Get a Job, recorded in 1957 by the Silhouettes. I thought they did some like hand jive thing. Didn't they do like, put your hands in, hand jive? Who knows?
You could be right.
I don't know. Maybe they wrote music too for Happy Days, apparently. Anyway, so I was roped into going to see them, and it was just very uncomfortable the whole time. I mean, you're under this big tent, and you're having to sit again. You know, there was like 65-year-olds sitting next to me, and my family, and my sister and I were just glancing at each other. We couldn't believe who we're sitting next to, right? And it's just all uncomfortable up on stage. They're interacting with the crowd in this way where I can't do it. It's like why I have a problem with, you know, when there's big stuffed animal characters walking around a theme park and they want to interact with me. I can't play along. Like, well, hey, there's Donald Duck. Let me go talk. I just can't do it. Mm. I just get uncomfortable.
What? Why? What about it makes you uncomfortable?
I don't know. Maybe
are
I
you
just,
at odds with your inner child? Perhaps?
I think that's probably what it is. I don't know that I ever. I just don't feel comfortable with it. For instance, and I'm sure you and I will talk about this maybe a little bit later. But we were at the Renaissance Fair yesterday, and you know when those folks come up to you and they're like, "Forsooth, is thine lady ready?" And you know, I'm like, I can't talk back to them that way. You know, I can't say. Surely you jest. You know, I say, yeah, buddy, where's the bathroom? Yeah, I can't do that. Mm-hmm. It's hard for me.
Why? I mean, can you explain this in some detail? Why is that so difficult? Whether we're talking about Donald Duck or we're talking about the town crier, like what is it about that experience that is repellent to you?
It's my self-esteem.
My self-esteem is repellent.
Right, my self-esteem is repellent, and I think it's somehow tied to this whole thing. Maybe I'm too self-aware. You know what I mean? I wish I could be one of those drama kids. You know, even though I was in drama class, and I think this is probably those individuals who you see like at a Renaissance fair, or you see who then, you know, the drama students who then end up dressing up like Mickey Mouse at a theme park.
Right. Well, that's it. When we were watching that magician, wasn't that exactly what I said to you? I said, that's Sean Owens.
Like, right.
That's it.
That's some individual from drama class from high school who you know is now, you know, he's 15 years older now, and he's still living out those the childhood being on the stage at drama class. And I, even when I was in drama class, I was always self-aware. Like on stage, you know, doing a character, even during our drama presentations and such, we had to do this one Shakespearean play. I was always self-aware. I was always too aware of myself, probably, to ever be a good actor. And I had to do this thing one time where I paired up with the Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus, and I went down and did this whole clown audition for a segment. And these professional clowns, you know, I'm off camera, and yet they're still talking to me like clowns. Like, I get it. Like, hey, the camera's over there. You just tell me what I need to do. And he's like, I'll show you. This is how you want it. And he's still in character. And I'm too self-aware to do that. I just couldn't do it. Like, if someone said to me, hey, we need for you for a segment to go and dress up in a fat suit and go walk down the street and do some different things, I can pull that off. But if there's a camera and I know that I have to do it for that. But off camera, I can't do it just to do it. I'm just too, I don't know what it is. It's true. I'll be curious, you know, because kids can pretend and they act and they put on helmets and they pretend they're swordsmen and stuff. Maybe I just can't do it anymore. Can you do that? I mean, do you do that with wrestling, or do you do that when you're out and about, you know, for Halloween or anything like that? Can you pull that off?
Right. Yeah. It doesn't bother me. I think maybe part of that, at least, is if we're going to tie this specifically to our most recent experience at the Renaissance Fair. I think because to me the Renaissance Fair is like an annual thing. I go every year. At first, I had like an aversion to that, you know, like I can't play along. But over time, I guess I don't mind it, you know, like I don't mind the interaction, not to the point where like you said, like
I did notice that about you yesterday. You weren't as you and I weren't making as high flying comments back and forth as perhaps we might have used to. It seemed like maybe you were getting roped into the Renaissance experience a little too much, and maybe we need to have a bit of an intervention. Maybe there's you're going to be there doing one day one of the sword swallowing things.
I'll be doing the bad stage combat on the chessboard.
Right. You'll be yelling to families as they walk by, "Fair lady, come to my booth. I'd like for you to swallow this sword."
So that's more suggestive, perhaps, than you realized. yeah, I don't know. And even though, like, I can't do that Elizabethan speak back to them. Like, I don't mind interacting. I don't mind that. And a couple things about our recent excursion. Several things about it, actually. First of all, my wife and I both agreed upon leaving that was probably, like, the lamest time we've had at the Renaissance Fair. And, you know, I don't mean to blame you directly. But it just seemed like it was so humid,
right,
and it was so
sticky,
buggy, that like there was just no energy there. There was no verve to the place. Like usually it's like bustling and there's like, you know what I mean? Like there's an atmosphere of fun, and it wasn't yesterday.
Yeah, everyone had, it was like an air of funk on everything.
Right, and especially some of the people walking in front of us was the air of funk. Yeah, I don't know. I was disappointed, especially because you know, your wife had never seen something like that before. And it really, I don't know, maybe I've been there 15 or 20 times. Like,
wow.
That was the least fun I've ever had there. And it's a shame that she had to kind of bear witness to that. Because even as we were leaving, she's like, it was fun. And I was kind of like, no, it really wasn't today. I'm sorry.
I enjoyed it. I mean, I had fun just hanging out with you guys, walking and strolling. But right, there wasn't, I don't know, there wasn't that, I want to run over here. I want to see this. It just didn't seem like there was much going on. Mm-hmm. It was like a few, like, sort of lost souls in costume kind of having, they're sitting down, like, eating a bowl of pizza. I did notice, like, one character chick who you knew that was, like, a part of it was sitting there just having a bowl, and there was, like, a pizza slice inside of it.
Mm-hmm.
There was, like, a few occasional characters doing a little bit of street performance and stuff, but it seemed like they were arguing, and it really wasn't performance, right? I couldn't really figure out what they were doing. So, you know, like at Disney, right? You know where you want to go. If there's a parade coming through, and you want to run over and see the parade, or... there are all these different things to distract you. And
right. There's an energy to that. And there was no energy yesterday on the Shire, as they say. Also, this was kind of strange. I think it's probably the first time in maybe 2 years I've ever been recognized in public. That happens to me very, very rarely, I think, because, you know, just I have a very average appearance. Yesterday, a Chikara fan stopped me, and we had our photo taken together. Which I'm certainly happy to do, because like I said, it happens to me about once every 2 years. It's not like a major inconvenience, whereas like something tells me, like, for you and your wife, like, it's probably every other day you get recognized somewhere. You know what I mean? Like, that's the difference between like the size of the audience I reach and the size of the audience that you reach. Like, that time we came up to visit, like, you couldn't even have a meal without being stopped.
Well, I love the folks that come up, and I'll say this the other day. Well, also, you were wearing your I Am Mike Quackenbush t-shirt. Yes,
right.
Which I think helped.
Well, and the fact that I had all the blinking LEDs on it.
Right.
I think kind of drew some attention to me.
The live ocelot on your shoulder. So, no, the other day I was up in New York, and this family stopped me, and they said, hey, we are huge fans. We are huge fans. I said, oh, thank you so much. They said, we love the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. And I said, that was what they said to me. They said that we love the Paranormal Report, and it was two young girls and the husband and wife. And I was like, yeah. They're like, yeah, we get together every week and we watch the Paranormal Report. That's like our family tradition on like a Friday night or something like that. And we love the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, and it just made me so proud. So if they're listening, thank you very much. Love you guys too. But that, you know, meant the world to me to hear that. Mm-hmm. It always does. But yeah, that guy came up, and you could tell he was particularly nervous. Got to see Mike Quackenbush. And got a photo.
That's happened to me a couple times. We haven't done it recently, but when we sometimes do these pre-show meet and greet type things, it was always kind of alarming to me when like a fan would be shaking, like they couldn't even come up and introduce themselves. And recently, I was over in England, and the guy I was riding around with was explaining to me, you know, that he recently had occasion to meet somebody really big in the world of wrestling. I don't even remember who it was. If it was Ric Flair, you know, but somebody who's of legendary caliber. And he said the person who went with him to meet this person was reacting in that way. Like, they were so nervous. They were saying, I don't know that I can shake his hand. I don't know that I can go up and say hi to him. And what this guy had said, he said, well, he's just a man, isn't he? Like, at the end of the day, you know, no matter what your opinion of him might be or whatever, like, he still puts his pants on one leg at a time, you know. There's no reason you can't just go up and say hello to him or tell him that you're a fan or whatever. Yeah, I maybe part of it, too, is that I've had the chance to meet, especially in the world of wrestling, virtually all the people I've idolized over the years. Like, I almost can't be starstruck anymore. And this was something, if you and I had had more time yesterday, that I meant to kind of get around to you about was the fact that, if you don't know, if you're new to the program, God help you. If you're new to the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, last week on the show, we interviewed John Flansburg, one half of They Might Be Giants, of course, with John Linnell, the Brooklyn duo, musical duo, who have been Clayton and my jointly held favorite band for the last 20-plus years. And while that was at once both kind of surreal to me, like even just being on the phone with him, I couldn't be starstruck by that. And really, like, what would be bigger than you and I talking to They Might Be Giants? Like, that's insane.
Right.
But the thing I kind of wanted to bring up is, in that regard, there's kind of like a couple brass ringers that we haven't been able to grab. And I think just when you look at, I think in the beginning, you know, we had guests who probably were not quite as globally renowned, perhaps, as Flansburgh of They Might Be Giants, we sort of worked our way up to that. You know, we had like more modest guests and we kind of worked our way up, you know. Now I think we really need to, by the time we get to the 200th, right, this is the 151st Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, we really need to start thinking of how are we going to get Sting on the show?
Right.
How are we going to get Papa Nez on the show? Or
exactly.
Maybe David Byrne. Like, these are the ones that, like, and we've tried. And to tell you a little bit about it, like, whenever we've had a landmark episode, like the 100th, the 150th, or as we're thinking ahead now to the 200th, we've always tried to attract somebody that, you know, we kind of like, we geek out for on the inside a little bit, and it's fun to talk to them. But those guys, no matter how we've tried to reach out to them, and part of it is there's so many middlemen we have to cut through. It's been really difficult to get any kind of connect with them. And I think a lot of it is, one, you know, like, in terms of, like, a worldwide superstar, if we had Sting on the show, he would probably be hands down the biggest we've ever had.
Right.
Like, would you say, granted, we had Stan Lee on, but, like, right. In terms of, like, their influence, like, I think Sting reaches a bigger audience.
I would say so. I would say Sting would probably be the biggest star we'd ever have on the show.
Right. And by virtue of that, that means there are more handlers, more middlemen, more agents, more PR people that you have to cut through to actually get to him. And, you know, and David Byrne, who he even says, he categorizes himself as saying, I'm painfully shy and I dread being interviewed. Like, that's obviously going to make it really difficult to coax him out of hiding. And, like, Papa Nez just doesn't do interviews. Like, he's richer than he'll ever need to be. Like, he doesn't care. He can do whatever he wants for the rest of his life. Like, if he wants to make, like, bad techno music about his car, he's going to go do that because...
Right. He can do whatever he wants.
Exactly. He can do exactly what he wants, and he doesn't have to listen to anybody, and for the rest of his life. And I don't know, what is he, 71? Like, he's up there in years, you know? So it's not like, eventually he'll run out of money and he'll need, you know, like, we'll find him at Garden State Comic Con next to Davy Jones and Barbara Eden. No, we won't.
What would you be? That's my point, right? Which is, you have these guys who, why do they go and do this stuff? Like Sha Na Na, right? I'm sitting there completely uncomfortable because
well,
they're
I don't
doing
know it. That Sha Na Na made enough money that they could, right? I mean, their heyday was what, late 70s, right?
Yeah, like, 77 I mean, to 81. They had a lot of variety series that ran. They had,
sure.
You know, and of course.
30 years ago now. Like, you could burn through, even if you made a good chunk of change, you could burn through that in 30 years of sitting on your butt.
I guess. It was just odd, you know, to see like them wheeling like these like 70-year-olds or 75-year-olds in on rascals in wheelchairs, and you had them sitting there doing the hand clap, you know. They're like, hey, come on, everybody, you know, the hand jive, let's go. And you're like, and it was just, you know, these old people next to me flapping their arms a little bit, and I just... Something about it told me that I needed to get out of there. My mom still, it rubs my mom the wrong way that I still got up and left the concert because I couldn't handle it. So I left before the
How
end.
How old were you when this happened, by the way?
Oh, I mean, I was like 27.
I see.
And I appreciated it. It was a fun night. You know, I appreciated the spectacle of it all, but I just, you know, it's not my cup of tea. And but this year down there at the Sunfest is Kenny Rogers. Now,
oh,
for me.
Oh, boy. And that's a personal family friend of yours. So now the heat's really on.
Right, exactly. So he's, you know, down there at the end of September, and when we used to go towards the end of September for the Sunfest time down there, and, you know, my parents were super pissed this year that they missed Kenny Rogers. They love him. You know, they did this whole special thing with my dad's office back in the day and had these photos taken with him and the whole thing. And, of course, you know, he's a big star, right? Kenny Rogers, mm-hmm. He's got some classic songs, right?
But when I think back to the way your house was when we were kids— There are two things in your house that I always knew where they were. I always knew where that heavy bag was in your basement.
Right, the punching bag, yeah.
And I knew where that Kenny Rogers photo was.
Right.
Like, even when redecoration occurred, I always knew where that Kenny Rogers photo was.
It always got moved, and it got moved to become a centerpiece every time, right?
Oh, yeah.
You would never push that photo off to another room, although I have to say in recent years I think it's been relegated to the basement now. Mm-hmm. It's kind of sad.
When it moved from the bookcase to your piano, I thought, this is a downgrade, and I don't know that Kenny and I are comfortable with this.
Right. Now, then it was moved back to the bookshelf. It was elevated once again, and I think it was placed next to some baby photos or something. Now it's been relegated to the basement. So Kenny really, I mean...
He's down with the heavy bag.
Right. If my basement is any indicator of his current fame, things aren't going so well for Kenny.
I think since that plastic surgery screw up, his stock has been down.
I think since the Seinfeld Kenny Rogers roaster episode, it's probably his stock has plummeted a bit. And I would think that his photo now being in my parents' basement's got to be a bad thing. Mm. So poor Kenny Rogers. But you know, I feel you're right about that. With like Mike Nesmith, you know, I don't think he I don't know that he does those types of shows. Although I remember the Brit Fest sort of reminded me of that. In some ways, it had that sort of Sunfest feeling to it.
Have I ever told you some of the backstory about the Brit Fest?
No, which is, if our audience doesn't know, and I'm sure they don't, it's like where was that?
It's a summer concert festival in Oregon.
That he played a few years ago, and he released it on CD.
Quite a few years ago now, like 1992.
It's been that long.
He played there. Right, you know, like, I remember the day... you remember back in the day, in the days of Saturday Matinee and Record Town and things like that, there was like this huge phone book-like catalog that told you when upcoming releases were going to be out.
Sure.
And the one place where we worked, the customers had access to it. And I remembered seeing it, like, Michael Nesmith Brit Fest, and the day it was going to be released, that VHS tape. And I remember, like, when the special order came in, you know, and like, oh my God, like to rip it out of the shrink wrap, and oh, what songs did he play? But anyway, it was like a summer concert festival in Oregon, and they would always get, definitely not a mainstream act, you know. Nesmith at the time had been kind of coaxed into touring because he was about to put out Tropical Campfires, which was not yet out. But Rhino, I guess it was, had released a compilation of his stuff that was called The Older Stuff. And they wanted him to go out and tour in support of it by playing stuff that he'd recorded between 1970 and 1972. And in that period of time, he was incredibly prolific. I think he put out 4 or 5 albums in that period of time. The whole First National Band trilogy, Tantamount to Treason, pretty much your standard Ranch Stash, and the hits just keep on coming, I think, all came really early, maybe as late as 1973 or 4, but a lot of his albums came out in that period of time. And the record label had kind of nudged him into doing this concert tour, which he apparently did not really want to do, even to the point where, as crazy as this sounds, some of the stops, he maybe played 20 dates, let's say. Some of them, because he was so nervous to get on stage and perform live in front of strangers, he bought all the tickets himself so people couldn't get in.
What?
Right? How insane is that? Or, because at the time, you know, his company, Pacific Arts, was heavily tied to the distribution of PBS documentaries on VHS. And in fact, a countersuit, which I think he won to the tune of $150 million, is the money that he's living off of right now. He bought them up and dispensed them to, like, his business partners. So it would just be, like, his friends and business acquaintances filling the venue up. So strangers, like, that is to say, real fans of his, couldn't get tickets. I believe it was at one time it was stated that like less than half of the concerts were actually attended by his fans because the tickets were all gone. He found ways to get rid of them because he had this terrible nervousness. And
bizarre.
Right. But like, can you imagine where you have that kind of money that like that's how you can play it? Like, all right, well, I succumbed to the record label pressuring me to do these concert dates, but I'm really nervous that people aren't going to show up or that people won't like what I do. So I'll just buy all the tickets myself. But one of the places where this wasn't the case was at the Brit Fest, which ended up being recorded and, as I said, released subsequently both on VHS and later on DVD. The year he played the Brit Fest, and the Brit Fest had been ailing, like they were not bringing in enough money to keep it going. They drew so little money with him as the headliner, that was the last year of the festival.
Oh, that's sad.
The Brit Fest folded because of that.
So Nesmith killed it, huh?
Right, and believe me, after that, I think he maybe played 4 or 5 more concerts after that, and he's never done like a concert open to the public again after that. And his last live show actually was on my birthday in 1995. So yeah, I think it had a real psychological impact on him that all went down, and the fact that I think in his mind, his music is wildly unpopular, and you know the places he played on that Older Stuff tour that preceded the release of Tropical Campfires were small venues. There are bootleg recordings of some of them, like in at the Birchmere in Virginia. Like it sounds like there's maybe 100 people there. But I think his paranoia got the better of him, you know, in some of those things. So a guy like that, you know, where, like we said, the money's an issue, and I think the way he perhaps perceives his own career might be part of the issue, or David Byrne, who characterizes himself as being shy and hates being interviewed, or Sting, who in terms of like his global stardom has so many layers of bureaucracy between him and us. Like, it's not like, hey, we just tweeted John Flansburgh, he tweeted back and it happened.
Right.
You know, like that's not going to happen with Sting. But right. I think we should really think about trying to get one of the brass ringers on for episode 200. And how, because if we don't start working on it now, you know what I mean? Like, we'll never get it done.
Right. You and I are lazy. So mm-hmm. we'll probably start working on it right around episode 199.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's too late.
And we'll be shocked that it doesn't happen. Right. So we'll have to get on that. Though. Yeah, we will. But will you be upset, though, if you find out, like, Nesmith comes on the show and he's a dick?
Yeah, you know, I'm sure people have said that to you as well, right? Like, you should never meet your idols.
Yeah, because then you're just disappointed. I'll never forget when I had to interview as a child, I had to write a paper on I had to find a famous person and write a paper on that individual,
mm-hmm.
which is daunting for a child, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because when you live in Reading, Pennsylvania, it's not like the town is swarming with famous people.
Not like now, since the advent of these podcasts of ours.
Exactly. Reading, Pennsylvania is home to a lot of popular folks. Including
you, me, and Taylor Swift.
And now Paul Roberts, the host of our brand new sports show, which, by
another
the way, if you haven't checked out, you got to go check it out, The Sports Report. It's our brand new Grizzly Production launched show. So if you like sports, this guy's a walking encyclopedia of it. Anyway, I as a kid, it was daunting, right? Like, how am I going to find a famous person? So
where are they?
My dad happened to know
Kenny
individuals. Not Kenny Rogers.
Come on!
Now, that would have been great, right? My dad happened to know a guy who was he was the uncle of Mike Munchak, who was one of, like, 10-time all Pro Bowl offensive linemen for the Houston Oilers, which that's about as famous as it got for me, right?
Right, sure.
And so the Houston Oilers were going to be in New York playing the Giants, and my dad's friend got us tickets. We went up, and I had sent him a letter. He passed it through this gentleman to Mike Munchak, where he had to answer, like, 10 questions. And I don't recall the questions. I'm sure they were highly insightful, right? Like David Gregory or Tim Russert style meet the press questions.
What's your favorite color?
Right. Why do you like football? How did you get? You know, what was your favorite sport growing up? That sort of stuff. Really insightful stuff. And
yeah.
I don't recall his answers, but he wrote me back and he wrote me back and gave me all the answers, and I was able to submit it and, you know, got my grade or whatever. So then I had a chance to meet him. And it was after the game. We met him, like, outside the gated area around the side as they were leaving to get in their cars or whatever. And, you know, it was not many people there. And he came up, and this guy introduced me to him and said, Mike, you know, this is Clayton, whom you wrote the paper for. And he literally looked at me, didn't even say hi. And I said, hey, I got an A. You know, like this little kid, mm-hmm. like so excited that mm-hmm. thanks for the help. I got an A. And he was such an ass to me. I mean, I was so devastated, and he, like, looked at me and didn't even know what I was talking about, and then, like, looked away and just walked right past me, almost, like, walked over me.
He autographed your forehead and walked away.
Right. And here was, like, an all-time, you know, like a 10-year all-Pro Bowl guy for the NFL, and I'm, like, I was just so devastated. So I have this weird hunch that, like, most of these guys, they'll put on sort of public airs about things, you know, but behind the scenes, they're just mean, you know?
But now, in contrast to that, I'll make two points about that. One, we've been really fortunate in that, whether through this podcast or through what we do on the side, you know, your work as a broadcaster, my work in wrestling, like we said, we've got to meet lots of cool people that we've grown up idolizing, from Eric Idle to Jushin Liger. We've got
Karnak.
To meet them. And Karnak. Yes, thank right. you. And I have never really had an experience like that, like what you just described with the football guy. So in that way, like, I'm really quite fortunate. And I'm always tempted then to continue to test my luck, you know, because you know that negative one's probably lurking out there for you. But on the flip side of that, I want to say this too, because, you know, I don't know that you go through this, but every once and again, like, you know, you'll hear this, they'll be like, yeah, you know, Mike's actually really a jerk. And you know what? The truth is, if you catch me on the wrong day, I really am.
Right.
You know what I mean? And the same with anybody else. Like, if you caught anybody on the wrong day, you said something that offended them, you asked a question out of place. Like, let's say you and I were interviewing John Flansburgh, and we said something, just to give you an example, and I don't mean this to be, like, inflammatory, but he apparently has, like, an estranged brother that he doesn't get along with. And if we'd brought that up, I bet you it wouldn't have been a very friendly interview.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, if we'd, like, hey, we heard your brother thinks that you wrote Chess Piece Face about him. How do you respond to that? Like, guess what? We're probably not going to have a very amicable discussion, are we?
Right.
So, you know, I think we always have to kind of take that into account, too.
Like, there are people, though, that I'm surprised by. Like, for instance, Suzanne Summers. Remember I told you this story?
Mm-hmm.
She was really, really mean to me when I was a production assistant years ago at Good mm-hmm. Day LA. I had met her mm-hmm. when I worked there in, 1999. And she was just a beast to me.
Right on.
Really rude in the green room and so forth and whatever. But now I actually met her, like another 8 months ago. She was on our show on Fox and Friends. And so she was on the couch with us and doing something. And she gave me a hug and a kiss, and she could not have been nicer. Mm-hmm. She went out of her way to say thank you and love your show, and I watch it every morning, and I love you guys on the weekend, Clayton. She knew who I was. And I was just thinking to myself, I wonder if she has – I mean, I know she has no recollection of treating me like a beast 10 years ago, and she may just have had a bad day.
Right, exactly.
You know, and any time I've ever mentioned to people, like, what, when they're like, well, have you ever met any celebrity who you think was mean to you or just, you were really surprised by? And she was always my example. And then I've had to rethink it. And I thought, well, maybe she just, she just was having a bad day. And let's be honest. But to do a morning show, you're up at odd hours, right? So she was right. up early. She was there, like, at 5 a.m., mm-hmm. which, who's pleasant then, right, except
mm-hmm.
me.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's really your superpower.
It is. I really, I think I'm mostly pleasant.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly I can shine it on, right? If there are nice folks of the show, fans of the show who come up to me and I just may have had the worst interview or there was something blowing up behind the scenes on the show and some big back and forth with a producer or I'm angry about something. Why was this graphic in there? Or how the heck did we spell that wrong? And I didn't know there was going to be two people in that interview and my card only said one. So suddenly I'm surprised on the air that this other individual is there in the interview. Like, that can't happen. Stuff happens in live television. So if I'm meeting someone just after that, I have a choice, right? I can either be a real mean person to these people who have nothing, or I can just be pleasant and I'll deal with the other thing. I'll deal with that later,
Hmm.
But so I always held that Suzanne Summers thing for a long time, and then to meet her recently, where she was so effusive, I sort of said, all right, I'll give her a second chance,
Right on. Yeah,
went back on that.
You just never know. Like, maybe that was the day that she got served divorce papers. You just don't know. And I think to take one encounter like that and form an entire opinion about a person sometimes can be a bit presumptuous.
Yeah, her Fi Master contract may have not been renewed.
Right, I'd be furious about that too. So
you never know.
I don't know. Like I said, I'm always curious to keep tempting our fate because we've had really good luck in that all these super cool people we've gotten to meet and talk to that – if you went back in time and told, like, the teenage versions of you and I, like, as we were hanging out down at Brenneman Park trying to scam quarters out of the soda machine.
Right.
If you told us then, like, you're gonna meet this guy, you're gonna talk to this person, you're gonna get to do this, we'd be like, oh, our minds would be blown. Like, that sounds like the greatest adulthood we could ever ask for.
Yeah, like, there's no way we're gonna be talking and they might be giants.
Right.
Are you kidding me?
No way. So... yeah, we've had really good success with that. We hope that you liked the interview that we did. And if you did, please tweet at TMBG, because John Flansburgh personally administers that account, and let him know that you appreciate him being on the show, because we really appreciated him being on the show. It was a real thrill. And that way, too, like, our Egghead Army has always kind of they've been the troops there out in the trenches helping get things like that done, raising awareness of us on Twitter. And it's actually been through Twitter. At the end of today's episode, we're going to be playing one of your guilty pleasure songs. I've seen a bunch of suggestions, not over just on our Grizz account, but on my personal one as well. Just a couple of them that have been submitted here. Someone sent into us, Clayton, I don't know if you saw this, West End Girls by the Pet Shop Boys. I'm going to disallow that because that is not a guilty pleasure.
I saw that as well. And let me see who wrote that in. That was
Port 4CY. I will put the windows down for West End Girls.
And yeah, Chad Ingalls wrote us that. That's his Twitter handle. No way. Oh. I mean, I love that song, West End Girls.
Absolutely, man.
Now, I will admit, slightly effeminate. It is a slightly effeminate song, mm-hmm. So maybe that's why he feels like it's a guilty pleasure. But
maybe if it was like Suburbia by West End Girls, that might be a guilty pleasure. But the big hits, no way. Always on my mind. It's a Sin. Opportunities, no. Those are windows down. Someone else wrote in Mbop by Hanson, which I had once said I thought would be a good guilty pleasure. Do you see here, Jay Thrash said, how about some Police?
Yeah, I don't even mention this. I was upset at Jay, because Jay, mm-hmm. The Police, next to They Might Be Giants, my favorite band ever, and of course mm-hmm. Sting, my favorite artist ever, and he says, how about some Walking on the Moon, or Synchronicity 2, or Message in a Bottle?
Those are three of your very favorites.
Right, those aren't guilty pleasures. Like, you hear those on the radio regularly. Like, that's not embarrassing to be driving down the street listening to Synchronicity 2. That's a rockin' mm-hmm. song.
Right, yeah. Andy Vital wrote into us about Total Eclipse of the Heart. That's on the border, I would say. And I don't mean the Al Stewart song. I'd say the Flashdance, though, if we're talking about the Irene Cara song here, Andy.
Right.
I think that might be over the fence into Guilty Pleasure Land. There's one that Billy sent in that I think might be the forerunner of the ones I've seen so far. I'm not even going to... I don't want to let that cat out of the bag just yet.
Yeah, oh, I agree with you. Yeah, I think that might be the leader.
So I also want to say this here. Some really interesting ones came in over on my personal Twitter, which is Mike Quackenbush. W.A. McCarty wrote in Shake Your Love by Debbie Gibson.
I think I chose that song.
Right. I'm pretty sure we have played that.
That was one of my guilty pleasures back at the beginning of the year.
Should have been Electric Youth. Robo Duke wrote into us saying Opposites Attract by Paula Abdul. I'd like to take that a step further and say if Clayton and I disagree at the end of this, I'm playing Rush Rush by Paula Abdul, which is way goofier.
Yeah.
Then Opposites Attract, Mr. Robo Duke. Let me see what other suggestions I got here. Another mbop somebody sent to me. Ricky Gangster wrote into us and said, Some Girls Dance with Women by J.C. Chazes. I don't even know. Chazes? Who is
it? I don't even know.
Who is that? Chazes?
I don't even know.
Is that one of those like former boy band guys trying to have a solo career? Is that who that is?
Maybe. We got some on our Facebook fan page, too. Did you see some of these? Joanna Thomas Tate says, Don't tell anybody, but I think Madonna's Beautiful Stranger is a masterpiece.
Don't tell anybody.
Thanks, Thomas. We won't. God, we just put this out there to millions of listeners. Joanna Gorman wrote, How about Don't Dream It's Over by Crowded House? And that's a great song.
Right. Not a guilty pleasure. I'd say not
a guilty pleasure. And Joanna, I have to say that, you know, one of something lyrically, that song is fantastic, too. You know, trying to catch a deluge in a paper cup.
Mm-hmm.
Just like the imagery in that song is fantastic. So no, not a guilty pleasure, Joanna.
No, I don't know that anything by Crowded House is. I think they're
Matt
wildly
Mahler.
Underrated.
Matt Mahler named one, though. This is definitely a guilty pleasure. He says, I mentioned this over on Twitter, and sadly, I'll mention it again. Miss Independent by Kelly Clarkson.
Ah, yes. Yeah.
Yeah, that could work.
So, also, this came in. Jenny S. on Twitter said, How about Anything by Journey? That really depends, because there
now
are some.
Remember.
Some are windows down. Come on. Don't
you
stop
know, you
believing.
Know my aversion to Journey, and because I'm a co-owner of this podcast, we will never play a Journey song on this show. I will not allow it.
I tell you what, let's Rolling Stones this up. Jim, what we'd like to do right now is we're going to play a couple seconds of Separate Ways by Journey right now on the podcast. Here we go.
No, we're not.
Yep.
Fortunately, Jim, no, we're not. Remember, we're not going to send you that song. Do not play it under any circumstances. Do not play it. I won't even allow space here for us to play that song. I'm going to keep. So, Bee Gees, You Should Be Dancing. Mike Azaria writes us too. So
that's a guilty pleasure. I'll give you that. So, but before we get to that, of course, all coming up at the end of the program, we should pause and thank one of our show sponsors. This show sponsor, not only here with us on this program, but another podcast Clayton and I do, it publishes every Friday called Daddy on Board. Here's Clayton Morris to tell you about the folks at Cobra Eye Radar.
Yeah, so you know, you might be speeding a lot. You're worried. Yesterday, Mike and I went to the Renaissance Fair. We were on the road. I think we drove for 2.5 hours to get there. You were driving for like an hour or so. We popped in the Cobra Eye Radar, which is a fantastic radar device. It's sleek, black, little box. It just plugs right into your cigarette lighter area, and it's powered. And also, what's cool is the cord allows you to plug other things into it. So if you got an iPhone or your Android device or something, you plug that right into it as well, so it can double charge everything. Download the free application, the Cobra Eye Radar app, on your Android device or your iPhone, your smartphone, and it pairs over Bluetooth with your radar detector. So you're driving along, there's cops on the side of the road, it'll pick up all of those different radars depending on what state you're in. Their whole database, they have every type of radar, so you don't have to worry about if you're driving through South Carolina into North Carolina, and if the police departments use different types of radar, which they all do. You might have K-alerts, you might have pop alerts, you might have whatever radar, they've got it. Really, really well done. And yesterday, I have to admit, we drove by, I don't know, it's like, you know, Pennsylvania cops, man. There's like 10 of them that we passed.
Yes.
And our radar detector was going off like crazy, which was great, because, you know, made sure that we slowed down to a... We were being safe. We were over in the right lane, and you just set that cruise control, and you're good to go, and let you know where those speed traps are. You guys had it in your car yesterday, didn't you?
Mm-hmm. And yeah, and you're right about that. Boy, they were out in force. I guess, I don't know, it was like Labor Day, like a day that there's lots of drunk driving violations? Like, is that a big thing?
No, I just think that all of those people on the road for the holidays, right? They're coming back home. That's their end of their sort of vacation, maybe, you know, Monday and that Monday night into their last night of their vacation. So, yeah, everyone was on the road.
Okay.
But, boy, did that save us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to find out more about this, there's a great demo video over at CobraEyeRadar.com, and we'd really appreciate it if you'd take 4 minutes of your time to watch that. Go over and check them out. They'll also give you some tips on where you can find them, because this award-winning system has been a hot seller since it was released at the end of 2010. It continues to rack up industry awards here in 2011. Please check out our friends, the show sponsors that make the Grizz possible, and the industry leaders in radar, laser detection, and red light camera detection. They are Cobra, makers of the iRadar system. CobraEyeRadar.com has all that information and more.
I'm going over to Wikipedia right now.
Are you? Because that's where reliable info is posted.
Absolutely. I'm looking up cosplay, which is short for costume play. Mm-hmm. Is a type of performance art in which participants don costumes and accessories to represent a specific character or idea. Characters are often drawn from popular fiction in Japan, but recent trends have included American cartoons and sci-fi.
And hippo centaurs.
Hippo centaurs.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite sources include manga, anime, comic books, graphic novels, video games, hentai, and fantasy movies. So, the reason I bring this up, of course, yesterday was the very first time, I mean, I should say this, other than going to, like, Comic-Con or something, where, you know, you expect to see someone dressed up as Iron Man or something like that.
Yeah.
Yesterday at the Renaissance Fair, you and I witnessed a number of individuals who you would think were working there, right?
Right.
No, but they weren't. They were dressed up as in costume play. And how would you describe some of the individuals? Because it was somewhat frightening.
Right. I think part of what has now started to ruin the Renaissance Fair experience, apart from the fact that it's just been commercialized past the point of ridiculousness, right? Like, you don't have vendors that play along, like, they don't seem to know the speak and all that kind of stuff. Like, there's the credit card machine right out in the open at the Renaissance Fair. Part of it is that you can no longer distinguish, in many cases, who the people that are supposed to be working there are from the really overzealous attendees.
Right.
And as I talked to you many grizzes ago, is it's almost become like this catch-all for all kinds of bizarre niche people. Like, I can recall going there, and there were people dressed up as if they were from Star Trek The Next Generation, who were doing some kind of, like, live role-playing, some LARPing, if you will, that they were, like, on the holodeck, and they'd returned to a previous century, and they were having their own little fun. And then there went, you know, I think with the rise of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies, there was sort of like this pirate niche that came out of nowhere, where people were turning up dressed as pirates. And they were like, oh, and they were sort of playing their own little thing over there. And then, especially when the Lord of the Rings movies were popular, like, you'd walk around and see, oh, this person's dressed up as if they're a hobbit, or this person is dressed up as if they're supposed to be an elf, or whatever. Clearly, like, emulating the costume stylings of the Lord of the Rings movies. And then what we saw yesterday, in addition to all these other, you know, kind of niche interests that are out there, were the cosplay people. You know, we saw a couple centaurs, or hippo centaurs, and other strange creatures, which on a day which was incredibly humid and buggy.
Right.
Like, I'd want to be wearing the back half of a horse.
Right. My lower half is covered in fur and hoofs.
Yeah.
I just was struck by these individuals. And you can tell, I mean, they were all getting out of the cars. We were in the parking lot. And you saw, like,
they were suiting
one of these
up in the lot, you know.
Right. Some of these goth folks were getting out of the car. And we saw some half human, half horse getting out of a car coming in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sipping on, like, their McDonald's cup of soda. Like, right. It's bizarre. And you have to think, these individuals, right, they want to live in this universe where, like, the Renaissance period is true to them. Like, if they could go there and live in that period, they'd be fine with it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're living that out. But I wonder how long they'd survive. Like, you and I kind of talked about this yesterday. If you had a chance to go to this time period, right, yeah. And you enjoy going to the Renaissance Fair every year.
Right.
But you spend like a half a day, you know, you're there. But
I'm
you know,
five or 6 hours, and then I got to get out.
So if there was a time machine, if there was a hot tub time machine that would take you back to this period, how long would you spend there?
Mm. And I think for me, as I said to you, the answer is about half a day. Like, once I realized the reality of how they went to the bathroom, I'd be like, nope, I got to get back to 2011. Yeah, I can't be hanging out here anymore. But I agree with what you're saying. I think those people, you know, it takes their, the way that they experience the level of the escapism they experience there is far greater than what you and I experienced.
Right. Oh, absolutely. Because I think it's an opportunity for their friends. You know, they come together. I have to picture, like, at recess in high school, they were probably off in a corner together, like the four or five of them, like probably role playing something together, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like doing some sort of weird fantasy interaction. And again, I think these are the drama club types. Whom I was a part of, you know, I was a part of that, but I just couldn't take it that one step further. I couldn't then dress up and you said there was one guy that you saw there every year. He's always there with like a ball and doing weird things with a sword.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, he probably lives in that fantasy world where he probably believes that he is in, you know, 1630 or whatever it is.
Right. There are definitely performers that work at the Renaissance Fair, especially since I've always kind of gone as an annual tradition, that I've come to recognize. Like I'd said to you, like the guy that plays the jester, who wears this like filthy black and white costume that really needs to be refurbished. I like his face, his voice. It's been that guy as long as I can remember. And like that guy we saw with the green ball, who was just kind of, you know, working the grounds. Like that guy is there every single year that I've ever attended. And as I was commenting to my wife, somewhere out there must be like a fascinating tell-all book about, like, you know, the entrenched performers and their in-house power hierarchy and like all these new people that have come on, you know, like the new ones that don't get it and they won't do the period speak and they don't really like and I'll equate it to this because, you know, there's a level of this with wrestling as well. It's no fun. It is absolutely, even though our curiosity wants this, there is no fun. If you went to see a magician do his show, if at the end of his show he turned his cabinet around and showed you all of his gimmicks.
Right.
You know, and said to you, oh, this is how I did this one. Oh, and this is how this one works. Right? That isn't why we go. Even though our human curiosity, that nagging curiosity, will always kind of be there, whether it's rolling around in the back of your brain or, you know, toe-tapping on the front of your brain, the reality is you go to a magic show, if you go to a magic show, or you watch, you know, like a David Blaine special on TV, for example.
Sure.
Is that you, for a moment, you want to wonder. You want to be mystified. And while we might wish that we, oh man, how did he do that? I want to know, like, how did David Blaine do that? Or whatever that thing is. You know, in the same way that you're like, I wonder what the jester is like when he takes off the wacky hat with the bells on the end. It is always better not to know. It's always better to allow the illusion to be preserved. And I think at all costs, that needs to be preserved because that's the fun of it. In the same way that, like, did you ever watch when Fox was doing those, like, Magic's Greatest Secrets Revealed? Do you remember when that was going on?
Right. I totally remember that.
Did you ever watch one of them?
I think I did, and I think mm-hmm. I was upset. Like they showed the person being cut in half with the, you know, with the saw blade on the stage, and they showed,
right.
you know, the like the false floor where they would go through and pop back up, and those different acts and routines and stuff. Yeah, I saw part of it. I don't know that I ever wanted to watch the full thing though.
Mm-hmm. I watched one, and I was like, oh man, like that's what it is. Like that totally ruins it. And my curiosity got the better of me. You know, that's why I watched it. Like I just thought, oh, I have to know. And maybe this is something that kind of comes with age. Like, I think my opinion about it now, where I'm in my 30s, might have differed from where I was at in my 20s. Because there was a time when I felt like, I have to know. I must know the answer to that. And now I realize there are some things that it's better not to know. You know, it ruins the enjoyment of it in the same way that there are elements like that now, you know, for whatever reason. Like, there are just too many performers, and they're not as careful about the way they screen them anymore, or the way they train them, that ruin the Renaissance Fair experience. Like, yeah, it's one thing like I described you earlier when there's no verve upon the Shire, but it was just the experience was ruined. There were people that didn't seem to mind the necessity of that illusion. And I tell you what, like magicians that don't mind that, or to extrapolate even further, wrestlers that don't observe that, you're really doing a tremendous disservice to your audience and your paying customers, whether you're mature enough to understand that or not. And like I said, I think that applies not just to the experience that you and I just had yesterday. I think that applies to like what prestidigitation is all about and sleight of hand. And it also certainly, you know, can be related to what I see all the time in professional wrestling, especially since I'm in a really unique spot in that As the head trainer at Chikara Wrestle Factory, I'm always breaking in the new generation of wrestlers. So I'm getting guys, a lot of times they are right out of high school. Sometimes they're incredibly immature, and they really don't have a good sense of how the larger thing functions.
Right.
And sometimes it's like you got to kind of take them along, and you know, like you're leading a mischievous kid by the ear, leading them around. Like you better, you know, you've got to understand that these are the tenets by which we are able to continue to do what we do, and it's really not your place to ruin it for all of us and for all of our paying customers and everything else. And you have to be more respectful. You must understand that you have a greater responsibility to your audience than the satisfaction of your own ego. And there are so many people that don't understand that. And I really felt that yesterday. I don't know if you felt that, because as I'd asked you, like the last time you had been there was probably what, 15 years ago or more?
Sure, junior high school, yeah.
Yeah, and that was like what for us, 8 years ago, right, junior high?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, there are just certain things that I don't want to know. I mean, the mystique of which still, you know, surrounds me, and I'm glad. Like, for instance, I don't want to know how Mighty Putty works. Mm-hmm. I don't want to know who among a gay couple picks up the tab at dinner, right?
That one, the mystique should remain intact.
Exactly.
Would say that.
And the same speaks to the Renaissance Fair. Like, I don't want to know. I don't want that third wall broken down, right? Mm-hmm. You walk by me, I don't want to see you smoking a cigarette. You know, or see you wearing Nikes, right? Keep the boots on.
Right, like, and, when the town minstrels skip by, tucked in the corner of their lute is an iPhone 4.
Right.
No.
Something tells me that didn't exist back then.
Right, exactly.
Like, but this speaks to yesterday as I was leaving, you know, I said to my wife, I said, I love these kind
oh,
of...
let's never do this again.
I said...
Why did we let Mike talk us into this?
If Mike ever asks us to go anywhere again... remind me to say no. No, I said I said I love going to these types of things. I said, well, and while you know, it might not have been, you know, one of the highlightable ones over the past 15 years for you. You know, I had mm-hmm. fun, and it was certainly fun to grab some food and walk around, grab an ale, mm-hmm. And just people watch was worth the price of admission.
Oh, right, the sociological aspect of it,
yeah,
was
absolutely.
Well worth it.
And I said, it reminds me of my desire to create that old West town. Remember I said?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I remember. This comes up every couple of years. We have like, we'll spend like a night talking about this.
I'm gonna, and I plan on it. Someday I'm going to do it. You know, when the Grizzly Productions Empire takes off, I'm going to create a Wild West town. And I mm-hmm. bet you there'll be people that would want to be
oh,
involved
yeah.
in it.
Right? I know there will be. I know it.
Just based on the fact, based on the evidence of the folks that want to live in the Renaissance period, you know, mm-hmm. I guarantee you, if I created like a Wild West town that was free of electricity, except for like some underground layer where I could go and, you know, jump on the internet, mm-hmm. And there's
that's
no
really important.
Very important, so I can go and podcast.
Right.
That'd be the only thing, right? But otherwise, you really wouldn't have the full amenities that you'd have anywhere else, and it would just be this Wild West town that for a week... You'd go and you'd live like you lived in a Wild West town. So, you know, there'd be a brothel.
Mm-hmm. First and foremost, there would be a brothel.
There'd be
and
a
there'd
billiards.
Be an underground lair where Clayton has internet.
Right. There'd be what else would be good in that town? There'd be a hog pen,
a blacksmith, I guess. Right.
Yeah. Blacksmith, a leather goodsman.
Right. Yeah, the quartermaster of the town.
You'd have if you had money, if you had extra money you wanted protected, you'd have there'd be an office for the Pinkertons.
Mm.
So the Pinkertons would come in and protect your money. You know, you need your private security force there. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't have to worry about a laundry, mm-hmm. right? Because you know, just all the clothes would get funky after a week. What else? I don't think you'd have to worry about running water.
No, not as long as you have your underground internet layer. No.
I guess you'd have to worry about sanitation, though, right? Because you don't want, like, folks...
Clayton, leave that to your subcontractors to worry about, okay?
Do you just put a hole in it? You know, at some of these hotels, you know, do they have bathrooms? Or you just had a bedpan, right? So you just mm-hmm. give everyone a bedpan.
Right. Well, I think the prostitute that you got from the brothel probably came with a bedpan.
I'd have to think, right? You have a horse pen, you'd have the prostitutes, and you'd have, like, a flap, you know, for breakfast, you just have a place to serve flapjacks, mm-hmm. right, on a griddle. I would really need help with the menu. Okay.
Do you think we could remedy your desire for this by a trip to IHOP?
I go in and I'm like, oh, you know, Clay, you can't get the chocolate chip pancakes there. You just go to IHOP. You can't. They don't have them back then. Well, I'm sorry, I can't create that. You have a barber? Oh, you know, that'd be a great one. You have like one of those barber shops here with a straight razor.
Mm.
Go and get that.
A lot of gore and violence. Chair. Hey, the autumn drinks have been rolled out at Starbucks, by the way. If you haven't been, I'm just putting... They're out. The
pumpkin spice latte?
Yep. Yeah, it's all out now.
Yesterday, we stopped on our way to the Renaissance Fair because we knew we wouldn't get any of that stuff in the Renaissance period, so we stopped on our way to Dunkin' Donuts.
Incorrect, though. The Dark Knight Cafe serves all those espresso drinks.
Which is true to the period, by the way. Mm-hmm. We stopped at a Dunkin' yesterday on our way, and they have the pumpkin spice iced coffees.
Mm.
And, ooh, was that good. Oh, man. So it looks like Dunkin's getting in on the mix. And did you see? I don't know if you saw at Dunkin', they have the apple cider, hot apple cider now.
Mm.
At Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah.
There's something, they're doing something right over there, my friend. But you like the pumpkin spice latte. I know I'm a big fan of
that. No, I
don't. You don't like it?
No. No, I do not.
So you're both excited and not excited that they've been rolled out.
There is supposedly a new autumn drink that's going to be called the caramel mocha that's coming out for a limited time. That I'd be interested to try.
Yeah, now with your anti-sugar crusade, I don't know how you'd be able to try that. Can you get it with the sugar-free caramel?
Oh, sure. Absolutely you can. Mm-hmm.
Oh, good. Just want to put that out there in case your wife's listening. Mm-hmm. I'm going to cover all my bases. And
I think she gave up on this program a while ago. She's like, what is wrong with these two? There was the prerequisite eye rolling and then the unsubscribe in iTunes. Before we get to our guilty pleasure song, which is coming right up here, there are a couple quick things I want to talk about upcoming for Clayton and I. As we mentioned, of course, you can catch us on Daddy on Board. Clayton's also on The Trending Show with his tech-savvy wife, Natalie, that publishes on Sundays. Also, a new bi-weekly, or I guess it would be semi-weekly, right? Twice weekly.
Yeah.
Bi-weekly would be every 2 weeks. Semi-weekly sports show, The Sports Report with Paul Roberts is also now on our network. So please make sure that you check out and subscribe to all of our podcasts in iTunes. Those numbers help us quite a bit. Clayton, of course, on the weekends, and now apparently increasingly during the week as well, can be seen on the Fox News Network. Not just on Fox and Friends weekends, but lots of other places as well, as they like to spread his smiling face all around. If you're so inclined, please come see me and the entire Chikara gang as we are on the road in the month of September. We're playing Brockton, Massachusetts on September 17th, and we're also, for the very first time, coming to Manhattan. We will be in the heart of New York City, Sunday afternoon, September 18th, at the Highline Ballroom. There are not a lot of tickets left for that. It is a very intimate venue, so if you do want to come see us when we play the Highline Ballroom in Manhattan, please get your tickets in advance. And even if they are no longer available through ChikaraPro.com, Ticketmaster or TicketWeb, you should look there as well because they have additional seats for sale that we don't have on our website. So as they start to kind of dwindle down there, please, if you're looking to come see us, we don't want you to be shut out. Make sure you get your tickets in advance for Brockton, Massachusetts, and Manhattan, New York. And also, I hear from a lot of people. I even hear this on my personal Twitter as well. People always say, I live somewhere where I'm never going to get to see Chikara live. You know, I live in Mississippi. I live in South Dakota. I live somewhere that is kind of outside of the circuit of places where we travel. If you want to experience us live for the very first time ever, on November 13th, we will be streaming a live internet pay-per-view through GoFightLive.tv. GFL.tv will carry the Chikara Season 10 finale live, streaming via IPPV on November 13th from the former ECW Arena. So please drop by our website to check out all that and more. And I want to tell you, next week on the program, now I finished, a friend of mine had loaned me, You Grunt, I'll Groan, the out-of-print expose on British wrestling from the mid-80s. So I am now returning my attention to Tipping Point by Malcolm Gladwell.
Yeah, get on that. I want to talk to you about it.
So maybe next week, I have quite a bit that I got to power through if I'm going to finish it by next week. But if I can, next week on the program, Clayton, who recently reread Tipping Point, and I will discuss Malcolm Gladwell's book there, How Little Things Can Make a Big Difference.
Yeah, and last night we watched, you know, you kind of got me on this kick. We were talking yesterday at the Renaissance Fair about these 50 documentaries that you need to see before you die, current TV is doing it.
That's right, and the countdown is over. So, boy, look out. If you start watching that, you're just going to feel like, I got to start watching all these documentaries.
Yeah, and you caught up on one, King of Kong, which is the great Donkey Kong.
Yeah. It didn't rank very high on the list, but it did make the list. And then you advised me up. I looked for this on Netflix streaming, and I couldn't find it. Troll Hunter is not there.
Right. It's not on Netflix. So it just came out on DVD this past week.
Oh, I see. I didn't realize it was that recent.
Yeah, it's a new release. It's a Norwegian film, and boy, is it entertaining. It's you can get it, actually, if you've got a Roku box, or, you know, so many of these TVs now are internet connected, so they come preloaded with these widgets and such. And this new TV we got has Amazon Prime built into it. And Amazon Prime works, you know, pretty much just like
Optimus Prime.
Like Netflix or just like Optimus Prime. It also works kind of like iTunes. But anyway, you know, it's free to subscribe. It's you buy per movie, right? So you rent like $3.99, and it just comes out of your Amazon account, whatever account you have linked. So if you've got a Roku box, Amazon Prime, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, is built into that. I think it's, I'm pretty sure it is. Anyway, it's on Amazon. So we watched it as a rental. It's not on iTunes. So we watched it as a rental on Amazon Prime in high definition, and it's fantastic. It is a subtitled movie. It's gotten well over 80% on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's shot in the style of like Blair Witch Project.
Yeah, it's got a mockumentary feel to it.
Yeah, and my wife, about 20, 30 minutes into it, says, "This isn't real, is it?" I said, "No, they're going after hunting for trolls. They follow this guy who's like this one troll hunter in the Norwegian government who's kept secret. Like, no one knows that trolls exist because he basically keeps them in check and has to kill them if they sort of wander outside their area where they're being kept." And it's really, really well done. And surprisingly, I was so surprised at how well the CG is. I mean, it's really, really well done. You would think, okay, maybe a small Norwegian film, it wouldn't have quality CG, but in high definition on our TV, it just looked, it was a lot of fun. So, yeah, if you get a chance, see Troll Hunter. Hopefully you'll get a chance to check it out.
Yeah, I did actually. I went looking for it, so.
Yeah, just check it out on Amazon on your Roku. That's the best way to do it. And we, last night, real quick, we watched, this is on Netflix, by the way. It's free if you got Netflix. And you, I think you would really appreciate this film. It's called, I'm not sure the name of it, but it's The Sherman Brothers. Are you familiar with The Sherman Brothers?
I don't think so.
So if you think of any of the classic Disney songs, they're probably all written by The Sherman Brothers. So, you know, It's a Small World, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, The Jungle Book, The Tiki Room, any classic Disney song. These two brothers who were, you know, one was like a writer, one was a piano player. I guess they both sort of played piano. And it's the documentary of how they were sort of, you know, they were always at each other's throats. They really weren't that close. But when they came together and created music together, they created some of the most famous, you know, Mary Poppins, all of them. I mean, they wrote all of these songs. And Disney was just so, Walt Disney was so intrigued by these guys and brought them in. And he thought for the first time, there was the first time in history that any songwriters had been hired by a studio to stay on staff. And he hired them. He just knew that they were on the same page as him for creative storytelling. And they loved to tell stories through music. And so they became like the Disney staff writers of songs. And you know, if they needed a new song at the theme park, or he was creating the theme park, he turned to them. And it was this funny story about the It's a Small World. Like, they had the ride set up. It was unveiling at the World's Fair in London. And they had the ride over there. And it was just this cacophony of little children, like, kind of singing. And it really made no sense. And it wasn't the song at all. And it just sounded like, he's like, how can we get one song that brings the world together that's not all of these random kids from all these countries singing and it just sounds like crickets? You know, it's just terrible. And he turned to them, the Sherman Brothers, and they needed this song, like, fast. And they wrote It's a Small World. And, of course, you know, as one of his, Dick Sherman said, he said, you know, a lot of people think of it as a novelty song, but he's like, really, it's a prayer for peace, the song, if you think about it. And it's, you know, it becomes such an earworm. And even the Lion King made fun of the song. There's that point at which in the Lion King movie where the parrot is caught in the thing and starts singing It's a Small World, and the Jeremy Irons lion turns to him and says, "No, sing anything but that." So really fascinating. But they just didn't get along, and they only they would even keep like their families away from each other at functions. It was just really fascinating look. And you really get to see how much reverence they had for Walt Disney. If you like Disney and you like the, you know, any sort of backstory or history of Disney, then you need to watch this film. And it plays on, actually played on the Disney cruise we were on. It was on that on the television thing on a loop. And the people we were with were telling us it was so fascinating. So yeah, it's on Netflix under a documentary. It's something called The Sherman Brothers. Look it up. I think you'd enjoy it.
Yeah. Was there any other bit of house cleaning we need to attend to before we arrive at the Guilty Pleasure song, or did we cover it all?
I think we covered it all. Yeah, the one minor thing I just wanted to ask everyone to do with our new show, you know, it really helps, and the show's not yet live on iTunes, although it should probably be in a day or two. It's certainly on our website, our new website, grizzlyproductions.tv. And by the way, if you haven't seen our new website, it's in beta right now. We're just cleaning it up, still fixing a few things on it. But go over and check it out. You'll now be able to play any of our shows on the website at grizzlyproductions.tv. It's our new home to all of our shows. We're really proud of it. I mean, Mike can attest to this. We've been working on this thing for months.
Mm-hmm.
Some minor tweaks we're still working on. But for the, you know, we sort of soft launched it last week,
mm-hmm.
Just to put it out there, make sure it was live and we could tweak a few things. But our new show, The Sports Report, you can click on it and play it right on the website. You can also listen to it on Stitcher Radio, of course. But once it's live on iTunes this week, we'd love for you to go over there and just put in some 5-star reviews and tell us how much you like our new show. And it'll really help other new folks discover the show because we think it's going to be a big success. I mean, Paul, as you know, who hosts the show, is like, you know, he's like Rain Man when it comes to, I shouldn't say Rain Man. Yeah, he's like Rain Man
mm-hmm.
when it comes to sports knowledge.
I mean, oh, I thought you meant in terms of how he dressed.
He wears a members only jacket.
What I wouldn't do for a members only jacket. No, yeah, I think sports fans, you will really be stunned by his expertise and. Yeah, we'd love to hear your comments and feedback about that and everything that we do here at Grizzly Productions, grizzlyproductions.tv, which will be ready for its official launch very soon. You can have your sneak peek now if you navigate on over that way. And that being said, then,
yeah, I think that's about it. Huh?
I suppose we should arrive at the point where we deliver a guilty pleasure song. And this week, of course, we've crowdsourced it to you. I got a late suggestion here, by the way, from on Twitter from Angel Aquarius. Well, neat, sweet, groovy song. You're invited. Come along. Sorry. We don't have the Josie and the Pussycats theme song, but I could sing the whole thing to you if I had to.
So before we get to our guilty pleasure song, we should thank our final show sponsor.
Now, I asked you if we had any more types of house cleaning type things to do.
Oh, but I don't consider that house cleaning.
You don't? It's dirty to you? Is this dirty work?
Not at all. I love it. I love it. I love our good friends over at handyholder.com, and these guys make the universal tablet holder that you can put on your iPad, your any sort of tablet device. You know, the brand new Amazon Kindle tablet is set to be coming out very, very soon. We've been hearing rumblings about what this thing will be. It's going to be a book reading device from Amazon. So, you know, your handy holder will work on any of these devices. Mike knows how it works. You just take off that dual lock ring, right? You just basically stick it on the back of whatever tablet device you have.
Mm-hmm.
It's you know, it's not proprietary, so you don't have to. It doesn't just go for the iPad. It goes for any of these things.
That's right, like the Super Robot.
Exactly. You put that hand strap on it, you slap it right on top of the dual lock ring, and then your hand in one hand, with the hand strap wrapped around your hand, you can hold on to your tablet device. You don't need two hands, and you don't need to worry about dropping it. I've got the leg strap, too. There's a leg strap component you can buy at handyholder.com. You put it around your leg. You can sit back on the couch, strap it around your leg, put your iPad right there, and you know, if you fall asleep, you don't have to worry about your iPad falling on the floor. We had one person write us and said, thank God I got the handy holder because I fell asleep the one night, and if it wasn't for the handy holder, it would have fallen on the floor and smashed.
Mm-hmm.
When you buy, you know, like a $500, $600 tablet device, you certainly don't want it falling, and the handy holder is a fantastic device to keep and protect your tablet device, and you can rotate it 360 degrees in your hand, so if you want to put it in landscape mode or portrait mode. And Mike, you've got some of the clamps and the tripods too. You can slide it right in there if you want to watch TV. You want to put it in your bathroom?
Yes, in the bathroom. You can take it in there. That's right, yeah.
Is that where you watch Netflix, by the way?
There's a I can watch it anywhere, Clayton, on my iPad. Yeah, you can. They've got a tripod for it. They've got a spring clamp for it. They have a couple different clamps, actually. And they have some stands for it, like a rectangular one, like if you wanted to set it up a la computer monitor, or they've got a teardrop-type stand as well. They've got a whole all kinds of great stuff, and it's all right there on the front page, too. If you go to handyholder.com, letter E in the middle there, there's a great 2-minute video that you can watch there that's going to show you an incredible number of uses for this very unique item. As Clayton said, it works for your iPad, your Nook, your Kindle, any tablet device, especially Super Robot 2, which is just coming out. And then all the accessories from the hand strap, the leg strap, the little adapter plate that you'd need for your clamps and the stands and everything else as well. It's all right there. It's a very clean and very easy to navigate site. And this, more than anything else that we've talked about here on the program, is the device where up front I thought, I don't know that that's something I would really use. And I have no reason to ever take it off my iPad. And the only reason I ever did was so I could put a case on, and then I stuck my handy holder right on the back of the case. It's a marvelous device. It's going to make everything so much more convenient for you, so much safer for you, and you'll just experience – you will have a much more pleasant tablet experience all around. It is the thing you can't live without. Trust me. Go to handyholder.com right now. You can purchase them right off their website. And it's made right here in the great U.S. of A. Do you hear me, Spain and Portugal? We make it here.
Indeed we do. Thanks to our friends over at Handy Holder, and you can order it all overseas too. I know we've had some emails and tweets about that as well from London and other ways. You just go to their website, and yes, they will ship it to your country. So thanks so much for their support. Now it is time for our Guilty Pleasure song, and we've crowdsourced it, as you said. Who do we find?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you what, let's not muck about here. Billy Bauer sent this in, and I have to admit, this is a Guilty Pleasure. The one-off hit from the early to mid-90s by The Divinyls. Here is the somewhat suggestive, I Touch Myself.